We want to be, we want to know who we are and to have a location. And part of that is good, but an extreme part of that can be bad, particularly if it's one that is sort of fused with an anger that we're being left out and we need to assert the power of our identity over others. Then it turns to be a, quite a different kind of phenomenon, and that's what we've been talking about today.
Indeed, and we do have to end now. I think the political questions of what you call tribalism and the assertion of identity and sovereignty, if you will, is a thing. I just want to flag a book that I've really got captured me recently. I don't know if you're familiar with it, The Most Dangerous Animal, Human Nature and the Origins of War by David Livingston Smith, who actually tries to talk about the biological nature of some of the things you're talking about. But maybe that's a subject for another conversation. But I'd have to let you go. And thank you very much, Mark Juergensmeyer, a professor of religious studies and global affairs at UC Santa Barbara. Thank you, Mark.
My pleasure.
Okay. And bye, everybody. This is Paul Rowland signing off on Wednesday Talk Radio. Support KBOO.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
I love listening to KBOO to experience music and news and public affairs that I can't find anywhere else. I'd like to hear more of that and less membership drive pitching. I know I'm not the only one. You can help us shorten our upcoming membership drive by texting KBOO to 44321 or go to kboo.fm/give. This fall's theme is Sounds of Democracy. Make your voice heard by becoming a KBOO member today.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 9 a.m. on Wednesday. That means that it's now time for Fight the Empire. So if you're tuning in tomorrow looking for Fight the Empire, you should be listening today instead. I'm not sure how that's going to work, how y'all hear that. Anyway, please stay tuned for Fight the Empire with your host, Per Fagring, right here on your Community Connection, KBOO Portland.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fagring on KBOO, your radio station, and we are fighting the empire. Well, Zbigniew Brzezinski was President Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, and in January of 1998, he gave a revealing interview to the French journal Le Nouvel Observateur. And this is how part of the interview goes. The question was, the former director of the CIA, Robert Gates, stated in his memoirs that the American intelligence services began to aid the Mujahideen in Afghanistan 6 months before the Soviet intervention. In this period, you were the national security advisor to President Carter. You therefore played a key role in this affair. Is this correct? And Brzezinski says, yes. According to the official version of history, CIA aid to the Mujahideen began during 1980. That is to say, after the Soviet Army invaded Afghanistan. But the reality, closely guarded until now is completely otherwise. Indeed, it was July 3, 1979, that President Carter signed the first directive for secret aid to the opponents of the pro-Soviet regime in Kabul. That very day, I wrote a note to the president in which I explained to him that, in my opinion, this aid was going to induce a Soviet military intervention. Question. Despite this risk, you were an advocate of this covert action, but perhaps you yourself desired the Soviet entry into the war and looked for a way to provoke it? Brzezinski. It wasn't quite like that. We didn't push the Russians to intervene, but we knowingly increased the probability that they would. Question. When the Soviets justified their intervention by asserting that they intended to fight against secret U.S. involvement in Afghanistan, nobody believed them. However, there was an element of truth in this. You don't regret any of this today? Brzezinski. Regret what? That secret operation was an excellent idea. It had the effect of drawing the Russians into the Afghan trap, and you want me to regret it? The day that the Soviets officially crossed the border, I wrote to President Carter, essentially, we now have the opportunity of giving the USSR its Vietnam War. Indeed, for almost 10 years, Moscow had to carry on a war that was unsustainable for the regime, a conflict that brought about the demoralization and finally the breakup of the Soviet Empire. Question. And neither do you regret having supported Islamic fundamentalism, which has given arms and advice to future terrorists? Brzezinski. What is more important in world history, the Taliban or the collapse of the Soviet Empire? Some agitated Muslims or the liberation of Central Europe and the end of the Cold War? Well, that was Zbigniew Brzezinski revealing what was going on. And we can see how well that turned out. Now, the Soviet Empire eventually pulled out of the trap in a more or less orderly fashion and was replaced by Vladimir Putin's Russia. And now we are the ones who are struggling to put Afghanistan behind us. Michael Parenti set the scene in a 2008 article for Common Dreams. He describes the government of Nur Muhammad Taraki, which made some serious reforms before it was forced out by a deadly combination of enemies, one of his own ministers, religious fundamentalists, and the CIA. Taraki asked the Soviets to send some troops, which gave the U.S. an excuse to call for a holy war. This is Parenti writing. In sum, well in advance of the 9/11 attacks on the U.S. government had made preparations to move against the Taliban and create a compliant regime in Kabul and a direct U.S. military presence in Central Asia. The 9/11 attacks provided the perfect impetus, stampeding U.S. public opinion and reluctant allies into supporting military intervention. One might agree with John Ryan, who argued that if Washington had left the Marxist Taraki government alone back in 1979, there would have been no army of Mujahideen, no Soviet intervention, no war that destroyed Afghanistan, no Osama bin Laden, and no September 11th tragedy. But it would be asking too much for Washington to leave unmolested a progressive leftist government that was organizing the social capital around collective public needs rather than private accumulation. U.S. intervention in Afghanistan has proven not much different from U.S. intervention in Cambodia, Angola, Mozambique, Ethiopia, Nicaragua, Grenada, Panama, and elsewhere. It had the same intent of preventing egalitarian social change and the same effect of overthrowing an economically reformist government. In all these instances, the intervention brought retrograde elements into ascendance, left the economy in ruins, and pitilessly laid waste to many innocent lives. The war against Afghanistan a battered, impoverished country, continues to be portrayed in U.S. official circles as a gallant crusade against terrorism. If it ever was that, it also has been a means to other things, destroying a leftist revolutionary social order, gaining profitable control of one of the vast untapped reserves of the Earth's dwindling fossil fuel supply, and planting U.S. bases and U.S. military power into still another region of the world. In the face of all this, President Obama's call for change rings hollow. Well, that was Michael Parenti writing. According to Parenti, it was a holy crusade for oil and gas, but now it looks like the oil and gas will run out while our need for it continues. If people want to call in with a comment or a question, please do. We invite your calls. Do it now before the end of the show. The number to call is 503-231-8187. Well, human civilization began about 6,000 years ago. Empires came and went, and great cities were built and fell into ruin. Ruling classes lived lives of luxury while most people struggled. It wasn't until fairly recently, about 250 years ago, that economic life ascended into high gear with what's called the Industrial Revolution. The world's annual GDP, gross domestic product, took a steep rise from less than $10 trillion a year to more than $100 trillion, all in a century or two. It was based on machines powered by the energy in coal and then oil. This energy had been stored for millions of years until people learned how to put it to use. This energy boost enabled our modern way of life, but once used, it's gone. Oil and other minerals won't last forever, and so humanity looks to renewable resources to keep the good times going. Meanwhile, the planet has heated up and could become unlivable. Long after the mineral resources are gone, the consequences will stay with us. Our nation and much of the world is moving toward a future of renewable energy, but the technology requires materials that are not renewable and growing scarce. Solar power requires photovoltaic cells. Wind power uses giant turbines that require manganese, molybdenum, nickel, zinc, and rare earth metals. Renewable electricity is stored in batteries using copper. Electric vehicles require cobalt, graphite, lithium, manganese, and rare earths. And many of these materials come from a few countries. Most of our cobalt comes from the Democratic Republic of Congo. China supplies the rare earths. Argentina and Chile produce most of our lithium. An electric car, according to the International Energy Agency, uses six times the minerals of the old-fashioned gas guzzler. All of these minerals are growing scarce, with peaks sometime in this century. Oil, on which our economy rests, has enough for 46 years at current production. Natural gas, there is enough for about 58 years. Phosphorus could run out in 50 to 100 years. Aluminum, there's plenty of bauxite in the ground, but mining and smelting use lots of energy. Coal is enough for 188 years, but it's terrible for the environment. 17 rare earth elements. China supplies 97% and says they could be gone in 20 years. And all this mining and processing uses huge amounts of water, which is less contaminated. When you're living inside the bubble, it looks like it will go on forever, something that will come along to keep the good times rolling. But so many resources look to be running out in this century, we have to wonder what comes next. The Industrial Revolution was supposed to be a launching pad for a better economy. Before the oil and gas were used up, we would supposedly figure out a way to get along without them. But maybe the Industrial Revolution was just a happy bump in the road, one glorious century, and then we're back to where we were. But now the oil and minerals have been extracted, so where do we go now? Where do we go now? If you have a question or a suggestion or a comment, give us a call. Please give us a call at 503-231-8187. Some believe that we can build a new circular economy based on bamboo and hemp, which are plentiful supply and are definitely renewable. They talk about bamboo for building materials and even bicycle frames, hemp for all kinds of things, and all to be powered by renewable energy. Will it work? Well, sometime in the future, in the near future, we may be forced to find out. We can see that these resources are have a limited lifespan, that this may be a this last two centuries of the Industrial Revolution may be just sort of a kind of a happy occurrence when everything came together temporarily, and when it runs through that process, we go back to where we were before. I've seen this graph showing world production, where there's a sort of straight line near the bottom of the graph, and then about 250 years ago, it suddenly takes off. It sort of rises steeply to a point where it were not too long ago, and then it declines again back to where we were when we started. So this is a question. People who are a child born this year will, if that person is lucky, will live to the end of this century. And this may be the sort of the blessed century, the bonanza century. And after that, we are back to the beginning. And so a child born today may sort of live through all that and live to see the sort of the final result of the stresses that we're putting on the environment. And if there is no substitute for the oil and gas, all the energy we use, if we have no energy source, then we have to seriously look at as a sort of the kind of like the end of a bubble, the end of a very fortunate period in human history. So we're about halfway through this show. I would really like to hear your comments. Do you think that will the economy move on to renewable resources? Renewable resources are talked about an awful lot, but we haven't seen that they have made a huge dent in the economy. They are being used in a very modest way, but we haven't seen them really bear fruit the way some of our futurists hope. There's a very interesting article. You know, we are bogged down in Afghanistan right now. Well, President Biden has sort of pulled us out of there, leaving the country in a kind of a terrible situation. You can't really say that we are out of it. We have wasted many lives, wasted a lot of money and effort trying to shape that country. And it has been a great failure. And you can say that President Biden did a proper thing by recognizing it as a failure and leaving without getting bogged down anymore. But in a way, it has already done its advantage.
Good morning, Per. This is, and good morning, listeners. This is your friendly engineer, Sonia. Let you know that a couple folks have called 503-231-8187 and would like to join the conversation.
Well, let's put them on then.
Okay. First up, we have Jeremy. Go ahead, Jeremy. You're live on the air.
Good morning, Jeremy. Jeremy, are you there?
Oh, hello. It's not Jeremy. It's me.
Oh, okay. Who are you?
I'm Marcos.
But, oh, well, okay. Well, go ahead.
What I've got here is a yellowed copy of the New York Times from Monday, June 14th, 2010. The lead column on the front page, U.S. discovers mineral riches in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
Economic boon is seen. Expanded wealth could escalate conflict and corruption. Skimming through it, they're saying the United States has discovered nearly $1 trillion in untapped mineral deposits in Afghanistan, far beyond any previously known reserves, and enough to fundamentally alter the Afghan economy and perhaps the Afghan war itself, according to a senior American government official. Skimming along, Afghanistan could eventually be transformed into one of the most important mining centers in the world, the United States officials believe. An internal Pentagon memo, for example, states that Afghanistan could become the, quote-unquote, Saudi Arabia of lithium, a key raw material in the manufacture of batteries for laptops and BlackBerries. That's actually secondary to the main point I'd want to make, which I want to thank you for bringing up Zbigniew Brzezinski. The American involvement in Afghanistan cannot be explained without mentioning him. But a lot of media accounts right now, of course, ignore his role. They set the clock after 9/11 in terms of everything that we've been hearing about the conquest of Afghanistan, the reconquest by the Taliban. We've been saturated with information about Afghanistan all week, but it's all in the granular details of what's just happened without any of the context of Zbigniew Brzezinski's imperial project, which is what brought us here in the first place. I was just reading recently that the government that was toppled by the Mujahideen, which was supported by the United States, armed to the teeth, supported specifically to draw in the Russians. Many accounts of what happened suggest that the Mujahideen was a response to the Russian aggression, but it makes no sense. There would be no reason for the Russians to even be there with a friendly government that was essentially the Russians actually had no problem with. There was a very short-lived government that arose out of a revolution of sorts that was hugely popular, and that started in 78 79. It lasted about 2 years, and then it lasted longer than that, but it was unmolested, let's put it that way, for 2 years, in which women enjoyed unparalleled rights. Everything that America claims to be doing for women's liberation, women's freedom, that already existed 40 years ago.
Good point. Yes, that's true.
All the Islamic fanaticism was an injection, essentially. Well, not entirely. I mean, there were local elements, but those local elements were very much energized with billions of dollars of American cash and weapons. And the promulgation of the most extreme fanatic forms of Islam centered in Saudi Arabia.
I think what it comes down to is that the U.S., rather than have a secular government that seemed to be working pretty well, they prefer to have chaos brought about by Islamic fanatics. That was our preference, and that's what we got.
And it was used essentially as a trap for the mm-hmm. Soviet Union. When Zbigniew Brzezinski brags about what he was doing, it's he takes credit for taking down the Soviet Union by giving mm-hmm. them their own Vietnam, something that mm-hmm. would drain
right.
the Soviet Union of treasure, of men. It was as demoralizing for the Russians as Vietnam was demoralizing for Americans.
Let me interject here. You know, we got rid of a secular sort of a pro-Soviet government that seemed to be working, and now we're dealing with basically the U.S. chose to have Afghanistan ruled by religious reactionaries instead of any kind of a progressive government that had Soviet allies. But go ahead.
Usually people call that blowback when a project generates offsprings of itself that become problematic. It's called blowback in CIA parlance.
Hey, you made some really good points. I think we have another caller on the line.
Okay, so good enough. All right, thank you.
Thank you for your call. Do we have another caller still on the line?
Yes, this is Anissa. One moment.
Okay.
Pear, your former caller just now, he's very, very well versed in all of that stuff, and I am not as educated or well read as that man. But I wanted to say that just recently I've read about this mysterious and curious element of rare earth. Now, mm-hmm. I don't know what rare earth is. I know that back in the 70s when I used to do a lot of dancing, there was a music group called Rare Earth.
Oh, really?
I
okay.
I recently looked it up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still a student of rare earth, but it's amongst all those other minerals that you listed in the beginning of the show that are, you know, they're very, very needed by the production of modern so-called energy-saving things that we use, like electric cars and the big wind turbines and all mm-hmm. the other modern stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Rocket, what's his name? The guy that sent the rocket to recently up, that rocket that comes back down and sits back down on its thing when it's finished. What's his name? Mm-hmm. That guy that did the Tesla. He and other people know that in the mountains of Afghanistan lie riches unearthed and unknown where they are because it's so treacherous there. It would mm-hmm. seem to me like if these governments of the world like China and Russia and the United States would just get along and find a way to help the Afghan country and people by mining in a careful way the things that are needed to improve society in the, you know, 2022 and on. I don't know why, I think that's why we were there in the first place. It must have been for the minerals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What do you think, Pear?
Well, I think that's part of it. Yeah, the minerals, certainly were one motivation. I also think that, for a long time we've had this strategy of kind of encircling the Soviet Union and then Russia. And so Afghanistan was sort of another country on the border of Russia. You know, it's funny, we did get rid of the Soviet Union. They are no longer around. But now we seem to be having even more problems with Russia under Vladimir Putin. We used to hear our people talk about it, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. so it's you kind of wonder where all this is leading to. But it's true, Afghanistan has a lot of mineral resources. But, you have to ask, even if we succeeded in sort of capturing them, how do we get them out of there? Kind of on the Russian border, back here where we will put them to use. I really don't know if there's an answer to that, but...
Well, of course. It would require that the governments grow up and get along and
that's right.
together and share the minerals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that is...
And in so doing, improve the lives of the Afghani people.
Mm-hmm.
Give
well.
Them jobs. Because who knows better those mountains than the Afghani people who live in and amongst them?
That's true.
Where Mr. Obama, I mean... Mr. Osama hid out in those mountains because nobody can get there except the mountain goats, who are the people who know how to climb on those rocks and know where stuff is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's...
Those people know where the minerals are because they lived in those craggy mountains mm-hmm. for centuries. Now, getting the minerals out, somebody had to find out that the minerals were there, like this rare earth thing that I'm in the midst of studying. I have no idea what it is yet, but it's called...
Well, the rare earth, there's a lot of the rare earths, a lot of different minerals, and it's not like they're in short supply, but they're sort of scattered around the world, and, you know, it takes a lot of mining and dredging to produce these rare earths, so... They're rare in that sense, but you know, eventually these minerals do run out, probably sometime in this century, and then we're back where we started. And so that really sort of leads one to question the whole strategy. Seems to be leading nowhere. So I'd like to thank you very much for your call. We're kind of
thank you for talking about this subject, and I appreciate you.
Well, thank you for call. So we are near the end of the hour. This has been Fight the Empire. My name is Pierre Fagre, and this is KBOO, is your radio station. We need your support. We are heading into a fund drive very shortly, but we want to ask your support.